Good evening, morning, afternoon, where whatever time it is near you guys. How is everybody? Okay. Yeah, good to see you all. Right, who've we got coming in? We'll just hold fire, boys. We'll just see who else is coming in the room. Hopefully we get a decent number today. How you been, Marty, mate? You okay? You well?
Good brother, good to see you in one piece. I got your message. Sounds like you had kind of a harrowing adventure.
It was hairy getting back, mate. Like I said to you, the rain was biblical getting back from Gav's. I've never seen surface water like it. Genuinely, like it was insane. And I was telling Gav today before he flew to Toronto, I saw three cars aquaplane. One nearly kind of totaled me, and I saw a crash as well. Like all in the space of a couple of hours. Like the water, we're here in the UK, we don't deal with adverse weather conditions very well at all. Any sort of adverse weather conditions and the old country comes into a standstill. But yeah, I'm usually a quite a competent driver, but last night was kind of the scariest I've seen it since I've been driving. So,
Oof.
and literally it was raining from about, I left Gav's about 9 p.m. and it was raining torrentially probably from about 4 p.m. So yeah, it was a bit wild, but it adds to the fun, mate. I made it here safe, so it's all good. It's all good.
Glad you made it, bud.
Yeah, thank you. How is everybody? Paul, Mike, Lewis, great to see you boys. John, Chris, Judy, Jeff, Josh, nice to see you all. Just let Matt in as well. Hope everybody is well. So we'll start off today, just because it's been a while since I've seen you guys. It's been a few weeks. So let's have a quick catch up. So just go around the room. Just give me a win, kind of what's happening in your life at the moment. Give me an insight. It'd be great to hear from you all. So I'll start with you, John. You're first on my screen. So what's been happening, buddy? How's things?
Things been really busy the last couple of weeks, but I got all my workouts in. I
Good.
drove like 1,000 miles last week, but
Gosh.
so my nutrition wasn't quite on point, but I did the best I could.
Yeah, hopefully you got plenty of hip mobility in with that long distance travel as well, mate, alongside those workouts.
Working on it.
Yeah. Marty, what's been happening with you, buddy? How's things?
Yeah, you're just staying consistent. We kind of live in a pressure cooker as we're getting ready to move to Portugal. So, it's been nice to have your support and be able to go back and forth just as we're, kind of about like we're almost there. Like we are almost there. So, yeah, I think the win is just keeping the momentum, keeping this at the bedrock, the training and the nutrition and the supplements and the peptides, that all forms the bedrock of me being able to show up and being able to actually, make the move and be there for my family. So I'd say the consistency has been the big win, as all the stress has been going on.
Yeah, knowing what you're going through at the moment, mate, tonight falls perfectly. So I hope I see in my screen those light bulbs pinging off all over tonight when I present what I've got, mate. But yeah, great to hear from you, mate. Mike, how are you, buddy? How's things?
Doing great. Yeah, I'm doing
Yeah.
great. Similar to the other two guys there. Consistency's been good. Workouts are going
Good.
good. Yeah, everything else seems to be going good in life, so yeah.
Good. That's great. Great to hear, mate.
Yeah.
Paul, how are you, buddy? Nice to see you. What's been going on?
Getting back into the swing of things from a week of travel last week. Spent the week
Yeah.
visiting my parents and tormenting their puppies.
Yeah, I've got my little one down here, so kind of I know what you're saying. I'm just waiting for it to bark at some point during the call. It's the first time she's joined me on a call, so yeah. I always say animals over quite a few people, so yeah. I hope you had a good time. Where are your parents? Are they far from you or?
About 8 hours away. They're in New
Okay.
Jersey and I live in Ohio.
That's quite close for America. I always say to you guys when I talk to them, like I drove to Gav's last night, it took me 3 hours and I'm going wild for 3 hours in the car. You guys just drive a casual 8 to 10 hours or kind of, and it's no problem. I think Brian, one of my clients, he was driving for like 17 hours last week. I'm like, I mean, as Brits have got it easy compared to the distance you guys have to travel. But no, great to hear from you, mate. Lewis, how are you, buddy? How's things? Are you going to remember to take it off mute today? Yeah, you're not going to take it off mute. I'm skip past you. If you realize how to get it off mute again, just shout up, mate. Josh, what you saying? How's things? How are you?
Okay, talk because I'm laughing at Lewis. I'm
Yeah,
sorry.
Lewis, he has a problem with that mute button a lot, Lewis does, but we'll forgive him for it because we love him all the same. So
I love me some Lewis. Love me some Lewis. Doing great, man.
Yeah.
Good to see. Nice shirt, by the way. Nice shirt.
Thank you. I got it from a guy that I know. You might know him. Yeah.
That's pretty awesome, man. That's pretty awesome. Yeah, things are good, dude. I'm still fighting the sleep battle. That's still a struggle. I can feel it impacting pretty much everything. But but a win. You asked for a win. It's every day this week, regardless of the sleep struggles that we talked about, getting up and getting some fresh air in the morning, alone time. Nights finally cold here in Louisiana, so that'll change tomorrow. But making sure that I'm that's the plan and sticking to it, getting my day started that way. And it's even though there's some exhaustion still through the day, doing that, accomplishing that first goal in the morning that I had set the night before makes a big difference. So big wins, man. Yeah.
And it's always a little bit harder without sleep. And I'll talk about recovery today in the slideshow, but I think kind of it's just understanding, as we said previously, and we always speak about, is kind of the ability to operate and have a system and stick to the system. And there's going to be something mechanistically, we spoke about stress and a few other things emotionally that kind of could be curtailing sleep, but it's important to keep things consistent that you can. And the phrase I always use, which you've heard me say, is control what's in your control, right? And your reaction and sleep will come. Mechanistically, it will come, but just setting the standards. And it's great to hear that you're still able to execute the things that we spoke about on the call about in the morning as well and get those done. So great job, buddy.
Yeah, dude. It's, yeah.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Phil, how are you, buddy? Give me an update, mate. Give me a win. How's things?
Sitting on a rainbow, man. Hey, my sleep is getting progressively better every night. It's trending up every week, and so that's kind of a great thing for me. Yeah. And my HRV is improving on a week-over-week basis for the average and everything also. So
good.
Other than that, man, you know, been
nailed. We don't need no more than that, mate. That's good. That's good. Like I say, I'll say tonight in the slideshow, kind of HRV is important. And from a stress moderation, we're going to talk about mental toughness and emotional kind of strength or resilience tonight. And it all ties into a lot of it ties back to recovery. And I have a phrase that kind of, there's no such thing as overtraining. I've been doing this now for 20 years. There's no such thing as overtraining. It's under recovery. And what we're starting to see a lot more now, when it comes to things like longevity, the importance of recovery and managing sleep, managing kind of things like HRV and the trackable data that we can to rip alongside things like aerobic capacity and VO2 max to really kind of be big indicators of positive reactions and outcomes of health. So to hear that they're improving, they're big wins, mate, which is great. Sleep, HRV, that's awesome.
Yep. Thank you. Appreciate
great job, buddy. Chris, cool. How are you, mate? Nice to see you on the call. How are you, buddy?
Yeah, this is my first one. I'm doing all right, Ben. Fighting off this cold.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be stubborn and not gonna let it get to me. But I'm doing okay. I feel like as far as wins go, today kind of got myself out of the house. Didn't really feel like going out to get work done, but went to the normal spot and got my work done. Got a little bit of a walk in, So.
Yeah,
we'll take the small wins as we can get it.
As we've said, brother, it's stacking the small wins. It's not it's progress, not perfection, right? And just understanding at the moment, you're not feeling too well. Like I said on a voice note this morning, what can we control? Getting out, getting some expenditure in there, keeping it low tone, controlling the things we can. So to hear you got out this morning, mate, great job. And as we said, it's just that stacking of wins that builds that momentum, right, which is important. So, yes, boys, as you guys know, I've got a slideshow for us again tonight. So kind of for me, just for those of you guys that haven't been on the call, those of you guys kind of it's the first time with me. A lot of you have been is I'm going to do the slideshow. So if you do have any questions at any point, because I'm not going to have you front and center of my screen, just unmute yourself, butt in, stop me where I am. I will stop at certain points to ask if there's any questions. But kind of for me, these slideshows are important because I like you guys to have a visual of what I'm teaching, but also it piggybacks onto stuff that I've spoken about before. So you'll hear me speak about a lot of phrases when I talk about the brain. Those of you guys that have heard me speak before will hear certain phrases and things that I've said when it comes to stress and previous presentations. So hopefully kind of the more I'm kind of repeating them, it goes in and just gives you a greater understanding of kind of what we're working with. So I'm just going to load my screen up here. Just give me a second. And then I'm going to just move you down. So let me move that away so I can see that. So I move you over there. So if I go to the top, perfect. So can everybody see that? Just give me a thumbs up, Marty and Chris, because I can see everything. Perfect. So as you guys have seen, kind of, we're going to talk a little bit about mental toughness and emotional resilience today. So those of you guys that have heard me speak before know I'm big on psychology. And the brain, for me, is a master regulator kind of for everything. And those of you guys that was on with Ben last week, he spoke about arousal state and controlling that arousal state. So what I wanted to do today is kind of piggyback onto that. And that there might be a few points that cross what Ben said last week, but just give you the science behind it. Because it's important to me when it comes to psychology, perception, and all the things associated with the brain, is I feel, and what I find in my practice, is a lot of people are very hard on themselves. I am this way. How they speak to themselves, the internal dialogue, but understand that our thoughts are essentially just a chemical reaction. They're normal. And our body works, as you heard in my the identity versus discipline talk, our body, our brain works on a loop, and kind of being able to manage those is super important. And what a lot of people think is, oh, I'm built this way, and kind of this is just how I am. But it's understanding with things like neuroplasticity and those sort of things, we can rewire these sort of things for a positive outcome. And when I talk about kind of mental toughness and emotional resilience, it doesn't just apply to training and nutrition. I say a lot of what we try to do here has a massive carryover effect to everything in life. So the interchangeable nature of relationships, work, training, it all kind of comes across the same path where you can apply these sort of methodologies to everything. So I'm going to start off today with just a phrase. Like, I heard this phrase, I forget where I heard it from, but it hit a chord with me. Kind of, it was on a course quite a few years ago, but it was, what if the only thing standing between you and the life you want is your ability to regulate your emotions and keep going when it sucks? Okay, so for me, what does that indicate, and why does that matter? So for me, it's emotions are one of those big things. And speaking from experience, growing up, kind of, I was terrible with emotions. The only emotion that I kind of knew was frustration. And being a little bit of an aggressive youngster and kind of hanging around with the wrong crowds, which I'm sure a few people may have experienced, may not have experienced. What I didn't master from a very young age through a lot of different circumstances is the master of emotions and understanding that although I was frustrated, I was unable to understand what that emotion was. So I'd be frustrated, but that emotion may have been abandonment. I was frustrated, but that emotion may have been sadness or overwhelm. So I think kind of understanding, even at ages that we're all at now, mastering your emotions and kind of understanding what emotions are kind of is going to be a game changer for you being able to, as I said to you, not just adhere to the plan that you're on, but improve relationships, whether it be with partners, children, kind of all the most important relationships in your life, but most importantly, allow you to regulate that central nervous system. So for me, kind of, and you've heard Ben say plenty of times before, the central nervous system is super important. And kind of, if you the brain is a bit like the gut being the second brain, the brain and the nervous system work synergistically. And it's important that kind of, if we can control our thoughts, kind of the immune system, the nervous system will regulate itself. And from an expressive standpoint in regards to any composition goals, but your ability to deal with stress is going to be significantly increased. So when we talk about mental toughness, what is mental toughness to me? It's just basically sustained action under stress. Okay, so it's the ability to drive through shit when it gets hard. You've heard me say a few times, and Ben says it well, is do the hard shit. And you're going to hear that a few times throughout this slideshow. But a lot of people nowadays, when it gets tough, because as you guys know from a subconscious part of your brain, is there for protection, it's there for safety. When hard hits, we stop, we back off. Those of you guys, and there's a few people on these calls that I've spoken to, recently that when it gets tough, kind of they do the easy option. But if that was the way to progress, then everybody would be in great shape, living happy, fulfilled life, right? And how many conversations have you had, let's say from a work perspective, over the last 6 months that people have just ever said to you, my life is the best it's ever been? They'll be very infrequent, right? So I'd say a large proportion of population, especially here in the UK, are more unhappy than happy. So kind of mental toughness and doing the hard shit and sustained action under stress is important. Emotional resilience and what it means to me. For me, emotional resilience, if I wanted to typify it, is basically rapid recovery from emotional disruption. So in that moment when you feel dysregulated, and when I talk about dysregulation, it can manifest in lots of different ways. It might be reaching for the wrong foods. It may be snapping at a colleague or a family member and becoming frustrated. And for me, that's not emotional resilience. That's just you failing at being able to control your emotions and react accordingly in conjunction with your goals or the outcome desired. So whether that be to lose weight in regards to the food, to be a better father to your children if you snap when they do something that you don't like, and just that inability to be able to take a breath and just regulate your emotions. So emotional resilience is important in a lot of factors in life, in my opinion. So both of these factors depend on one mechanism for me, and that's neuroplasticity. Okay, and just for those of you guys that have and haven't listened to me, to go into it again, neuroplasticity to me is just the brain's ability to rewire itself based on experiences in life, in business, and also in relationships. So they're all performance multipliers that along the way and throughout life to get to you this point, there's going to be faulty mechanisms in neuroplasticity, emotions, experiences, maybe from childhood, early adult life. There's a whole host of reasons that kind of we can have faulty mechanisms, but our ability to identify where that came from, and most importantly, flip it from a weakness into a strength, is going to serve you well moving forward in all the previous things that I've spoken about, in regards to kind of the situations of life, shall we say. So, kind of the misconception behind mental toughness is, you heard me say it in a previous webinar in regards to identity and discipline. Discipline is good and it will serve you well for a while, but over time that needs to be turned to identity, because with discipline, when stress ramps up and things get difficult, essentially the first thing to go is that discipline, and you reach or do the wrong thing. Not the wrong things, things that aren't conducive to your goal, shall we say. So the misconception is mental toughness is just willpower. But for me, it's actually brain training. So I think of the brain like a muscle. Like you train, you wouldn't expect your bicep to grow with just holding it in one position. We tr all train our biceps to get them bigger. And I kind of like to see the brain as the same thing. Brain training or neuroplasticity or however what you want to typify it, and working on the brain is a huge component, because the direct correlation to everything else that you action is massively important. So it's just understanding that kind of neuroscience itself is a big subject, but ultimately kind of it's one that will serve you, because every conscious action, every conscious reaction starts with a chemical messenger from your brain. So when I talk to people about exercise execution and we go through the videos, I say a lot, like to contract my bicep or to get a bicep pump, there's got to be a chemical messenger sent down from my brain down through the system to tell my elbow to flex to squeeze my bicep. So for me, the brain is essentially the master regulator to everything from a health and fitness standpoint, but also perception and how you see the world, how you see certain situations. It's a big player. And failure to understand how to use your brain to your benefit, I think, is a limitation that a lot of people have. None of you guys that are involved in the process, because I know your coach has always talked to you about this, but it's almost a unwritten superpower that if you use it right, it's gonna be how you perceive the world and how you perceive everything in life is gonna change dramatically. So moving into the neuroscience part, and again, I know I've explained these areas to you before, so just going over them, I want to kind of rehash them. But there's four main key brain areas that are responsible for neuroplasticity or neuroscience. So we've got your prefrontal cortex. So those of you that remember, the prefrontal cortex is designed for executive control, attention, and regulation of emotion. Then we have your amygdala. Your amygdala is more for threat detection, kind of, and more emotional reactivity, shall we say, whereas the prefrontal cortex is more for regulation. The amygdala is essentially that emotional reactivity if we perceive a threat. Okay, then we have your ACC, which is your anterior cingulate cortex. Okay, so that's typically there to detect errors. From a conflict perspective, it's there to detect emotional conflict, but it's also there to regulate emotional conflict. So kind of it's kind of a mirror of the amygdala, but essentially kind of it's more error detection than threat detection. So there's a slight tweak to the difference. And then the last one is your hippocampus, which is more for memory and being able to. So kind of when you look at the hippocampus, it's more memory and kind of contextualizing emotion. So we're from an emotion standpoint, we've got your amygdala, which is more kind of reactivity. We've got your PFC, which is more regulation. We've got your ACC, which is more kind of conflict regulation. And then you've got your hippocampus, which kind of allows you to create a memory and then contextualize that emotion that you felt with that memory, if that makes sense. So they're all important mechanisms of the brain. So when we look at the areas of the brain in regards to the mental toughness element, we always want to kind of favor that if we can, and we can talk, we'll talk how to train it in a second, but we always want to try and favor the prefrontal cortex over the amygdala where possible. So essentially when stress hits, kind of I'm going to say the weaker man, and this isn't offensive to those of you that are reactive, but kind of the weaker man will get hijacked by emotion, okay, and just kind of start to get all kind of tense and kind of, you've seen them, the drivers that literally kind of the lights turn green, you haven't moved in 1 second and they're already beeping on the horn. They're the type of people I'm speaking about. They get hijacked by that amygdala and kind of get heightened very quickly by emotion. Whereas I typify as tougher men when it comes to mental toughness, they're able to stay grounded. So that prefrontal cortex stays online and they're able to take a breath, regulate, read what messages are coming in and be able to respond accordingly. Okay, so when it comes to mental toughness itself, we want to be favoring that prefrontal cortex over that amygdala. Remember, because again, the PFC is more a regulator of emotion. Then we look at emotional resilience. So emotional resilience is more kind of, the ACC is like your internal regulator. So kind of, it's going to allow you to focus under pressure. It will allow you to kind of resolve conflict resolution from an emotional perspective, but also from a perspective, it allows you to switch. So again, those of you guys that have spoke to me or we've had conversations and I've talked to you about flipping kind of the narrative on something. So you presented me with a negative and we've flipped it and we've said, right, let's look at the positive to this. That's what I talk about. But that's what, again, we're trying to do when we rewire the ACC. Okay, so perception is something that I talk about a lot. And kind of for me, perception is everything because we are, as you've heard me say in previous talks, very negatively biased because of protection and safety. But kind of perception in every situation is everything. When you talk to a communicative response, kind of any argument that let's say you've had with your spouse, okay, and it's escalated. Okay, how many times have you finished an argument and you've totally forgot what you was arguing about in the first place? Because your perception of what's been said, you might have seen a fence, you might have heard something when in reality, all there was telling you to do was do the washing up as an example. But how it progresses is you've taken offense because they've attacked you in a certain way and you felt offended. So essentially kind of your perspective has changed when the actual reality of the situation is what's fact, what's thought. So perspective switching from a rewiring, the ACC kind of is tied into emotional resilience. So kind of for me, the more resilience we have, the better that ACC is going to function and be able to operate in its best, in the best way. So when it comes to kind of regulation, it's going to massively allow you to have things coming in, but be able to make the correct decision in how you choose to respond to them. So do we get a sympathetic drive where we're riled up and kind of we're in a stress position, or are we able to compartmentalize, understand the situation, and pass it off? So emotional resilience and rewiring that ACC is important. So going back to the PFC or the prefrontal cortex is how do we train it? So when we spoke a second ago about training the brain, okay, so we know that the prefrontal cortex is going to be weakened by chronic stress. So the more time you spend in sympathetic dominance, the more that PFC is going to be affected. Okay, but it's also strengthened by conscious regulation. So your ability to have stress in and be able to control it. So kind of there's a few things that we can do to effectively train that or enhance that PFC. So things like focused attention, CO2 tolerance increases HRV, right? So going back to what Ben said last week about the importance of breathing, breathing's important. So that's a way to actively kind of enhance PFC activity. Also things like meditation. So meditation itself can, well, it's been said that it can increase cortical thickness in a PFC, which basically reduces the amygdala volume. So kind of for me, kind of breathing and positive thinking, gratitude journaling, all those things kind of have a massive importance. So don't underestimate the power of thought. The power of thought in regards to neuroplasticity and rewiring your brain is an important factor as well. So, as I said, focused attention, breath work, meditation can all help enhance PFC activity, which is going to serve you well to kind of be more PFC dominant. Okay. And then the last point I put down there is basically kind of emotional regulation is a skill. Okay. So the ACC and the PFC basically will suppress that amygdala reactivity, which is what I've just spoken about a little bit. And we still want that amygdala to be functional, but in stressful situations. So for me, kind of being able to activate the ACC and the PFC will actually suppress that amygdala reactivity, which is going to kind of be a positive from a reaction standpoint. And remember, all this ties back into stress. So when we talk about controlling the arousal state, which Ben spoke about last week, this is just the science behind it in regards to how we manage it is conducive to kind of what's going to happen from a results perspective. Okay. And studies have shown that kind of mindful-based interventions can increase connectivity between the PFC and the amygdala, so they can work in conjunction a little bit better. In things like, as I said, improve regulation, and basically just cognitive reappraisal can shift the meaning of stress, changing the actual physiological response. So again, those of you who heard my podcast with Ben when he was here in London, I talk about necessary and unnecessary stress, right? And this is what I'm talking about is it's impossible to rid the body of stress, but for me, there's very much necessary and unnecessary stress. So kind of being able to kind of shift the meaning of stress and understand and compartmentalize what deserves sympathetic drive from me and what doesn't. And if I wanted to give you an example, as I said, kind of the drive to work where you get stuck in traffic because you've left late. That's not necessary stress. That's something that you can control. You left late. You're 5 minutes late, so that's a you problem. So rather than getting stressed about the traffic now moving slow and you getting stuck behind every red light, do better in your systems and leave earlier. And kind of so when we talk about necessary and unnecessary stress from a let's say a neuroscience standpoint, that's what we're talking about. So that cognitive reappraisal can shift the meaning of stress and your view of stress, which is super important. Okay, so is there any questions on the neuroscience bit? Because I'm going to flip on now. If there is, just unmute yourself and ask now.
Dan, real quick, did
Yeah.
you say cognitive reappraisal? That's what you said, right?
Yes. Yeah. Cognitive reappraisal, mate. Yeah.
Okay. I want some more on that, but I'm gonna make a note. We'll talk later.
Yeah, we can talk about it. Write your questions down, buddy. So just moving into kind of stress and neuroplasticity now. So again, the science of stress adaptation. So as I said a second ago, for me, stress isn't bad. Chronic unregulated stress is, but stress is necessary. We need to find the correct balance between sympathetic and parasympathetic drive. We need to be able to fight, flee, and kind of, as I said in the podcast, kind of training itself, it's an acute stressor. We need a big sympathetic drive when we're resistance training, because that's that animalistic kind of drive that we want to get strong, lift heavy, have a great workout. So stress isn't bad, and I don't like to typify stress as bad, but basically chronic, unregulated, and unnecessary stress is. Okay, and going back into neuroplasticity, as I said a second ago, your brain adapts to what you repeat. So it becomes a pattern, it becomes a network, it becomes a kind of feedback loop that your brain goes into. So neuroplasticity itself, kind of for me, it's structural. And if you wanted to typify it and you wanted to write a phrase of what neuroplasticity is, I suppose we should start there. It's structural and functional changes in neural circuits, and they can be based on things like repetition, attention, emotional salience. So again, emotional salience, if that's a new word for some of you guys, it's to the degree of which something is emotionally important or stands out. So when we talk about vision, when we talk about goals, when we talk about kind of identity, that's what kind of emotional salience is. It's the degree of which something is important to us. So neuroplasticity can be changed if something is or isn't important. So being able to identify your values, being able to identify what you stand for and your highest values. You've heard me speak about values before, and Dr. John DeMartini, who Ben talks about, doing the values test, or reading the values factor, which is his book, is great to understand values. And when it comes to action, there's nothing that will depict stronger action than working towards your values and having this greater significant meaning to kind of what you're doing. Okay. And then the last one, when it comes to neuroplasticity and how functional changes in neurocircuits can happen, is recovery, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. I've put a couple of phrases there as well, kind of the Hebbian learning, neurons that fire together, wire together, and then basically kind of the synaptic strength changes. They enable new habits and emotional responses. So as you can see, it's habits, emotional responses, all interlinked. So if any of you are on this call today and you're thinking, oh, I struggle to do this, or I just can't seem to get my head around that, think about the neural rewiring that could happen. And that's where kind of your greatest change is. I always say, kind of in regards to change, I don't buy into this 3 month kind of, oh, stick to a habit for 3 months, because if there's no meaning attached or there's not kind of a network rewire, then things are going to revert to type very quickly. A behavior model I like to look at is the Myers-Briggs personality profile test, or the Myers-Briggs stages of change model. And the last stage of change after the first five stages is relapse. And any of you guys that have done it, fell off, kind of, it just means, it doesn't make you a bad person. It doesn't mean that you're rubbish at something. It doesn't mean that you're no good. All it means is you failed to create a new neural network, which has brought you into this new way of life. I talk to my guys all the time about old normals and new normals. Your old normal is what brought you to muscle intelligence. What we're trying to create is a new normal. And that doesn't mean that you have to change. You're not changing as an individual, but certain aspects of your life have to change for you to become this. It's not better. Better is the wrong superlative to use, but this new, improved kind of version of yourself that's going to hopefully live forever, or live for as long as possible, and kind of attack everything in life with the drive and desire that you were destined to do. Okay. So in regards to kind of daily practices that we can do to reinforce mental toughness. Okay. So for me, things like deliberate discomfort. So that would be cold exposure, hard workouts, putting yourself into hard situations and knowing, or things that you fear, doing stuff that you fear, the conversations you you fear to fear, you may fear having, kind of all those sort of things kind of are going to reinforce mental toughness, cognitive control. So whether that be things like focused journaling, if you journal, it could be meditation. So kind of just being able to sit with your thoughts, which again, the chaos of a lot of people's mind in today's day and age, just sitting with your thoughts can be a powerful tool. Breath work. So we know, as we said, with breath work and its link or its coherence to kind of regulating things like HRV, that could be a great option. Emotional rehearsal. So visualizing and kind of thinking of situations that you've previously not coped well and going through almost a practice session of, right, this didn't go well, this conversation, my failure to get up in the morning when I've set my alarm to go to the gym, that didn't go well. So can we rehearse it of being a little bit calmer under pressure, and how can we action and be different in that circumstance? And then the last one is just sleep discipline. So obviously having a regular sleep wake cycle, regulating that circadian rhythm is going to kind of enhance things like BDNF and memory. So in regards to your ability to execute is going to significantly increase as well. So a lot of you guys hear me talk about sleep on pretty much every talk that I do, but it's such a underutilized tool for recovery, which has a broad stroke kind of positive over everything in your life. And then the last bit that I didn't put on there that could, again, that could help kind of from a neuroplasticity standpoint is, as I've said, the role of breath work. So in regards to the role of breath itself, okay, something like a long exhale. So there's different ways of breathing. I'm not going to say this is the best way for breathing, because as you guys know, there's so many different breathing protocols out there, box breathing, long, short breathing, extended breaths. So kind of for me, it's just understanding the role of breath itself in regards to the brain. So with a long exhale, that will typically signal safety to the brain. And if you're inhale dominant, that's going to activate your stress response. So just knowing the difference between the inhale and the exhale, I think, and the role of breath in regards to brain activity is important. So again, long exhale signals safety. Inhale dominant is going to be more activate stress response. Okay, so short, sharp breaths in, again, that's going to kind of upregulate. So just knowing the difference between breath on the brain, I think, is important. So kind of depending on which way you want to flip it, if you want to get up for a set, inhales. Again, if you want to calm, more parasympathetic, then we're going to go longer exhales, which, again, with all the breath work that Ben spoke about and those sort of things, you guys are pretty clued up on that. And I think for me, kind of, it's just understanding emotions are signals and not truths. Okay. So as I said to you earlier, I use the example of myself when I was a kid. The only kind of emotion that I really knew was frustration and anger, lashing out, kind of being on a football pitch and getting sent off for kind of kicking somebody because they fouled me, etc. Just my fuse was so short. But there was a lot of other things going on. But that what that was in that age, and as I've got older, that's been a great feedback to me in regards to my inability to understand emotions. So as I've gone through my life, it's been great feedback for me. So tracing things back and I've gone way back to when I was a kid, but looking at situations that have happened over the last few days, that when you're looking at your daily top five and things you haven't achieved or things you haven't succeeded in that you want to, kind of look back and say, kind of, right, what emotion did I show and what is the feedback to that? And I think just understanding that kind of, understanding emotions kind of is a great way to kind of be able to start to regulate a few things. And then mental toughness means response over reaction. So again, for me, a situation, somebody cuts you up in traffic, kind of mental toughness isn't kind of reacting, flipping them a bird, honking your horn, chasing them down the road and kind of swearing at them at the lights. That's a reaction. A response would be, is everybody safe in the car? Yeah. Am I safe? Is everything okay? Yeah. Okay. On we go to my destination. And we all know that we've probably been there where we've been the road rage person, but just understanding your response, because the reality is that's just triggered a downstream stress response in you, which can be avoided as well. So in regards to support or biomechanical support for the brain, obviously we know from a nutrition standpoint, supplements, sleep's important. So we know when physiology itself, kind of your mindset follows. You eat shit, you feel like shit. How many of you guys have been on plan for 8 weeks? You've gone out for a, I don't like to say cheat meal, I call it a choice meal, or a meal that's kind of off kilter, off plan. You might have smashed a pizza for your birthday, had some cake. You wake up the next morning, you almost feel hungover. Again, kind of dopamine drops, kind of, and that initial kind of chemical reaction that you got where it, oh, it tastes amazing, but then you feel like not so good afterwards. Okay, so physiology has a large role to play in mindset, in my belief. And if you're not looking after yourself, you're not putting the right fuel into the engine, then kind of dopamine, and when we look at all the neurotransmitters and catecholamines, they're all going to follow suit and they're all going to plummet. And Ben spoke often about dopamine chasing and how we live in a society where we are chasing quick fixes, whether it be porn, sex, drugs, alcohol. They're all dopamine kind of chasing. Whereas if we can get into a position where natural dopamine occurs from the people that we love and the things that we do, the results we achieve, that's a more safe sanctuary for us and chasing the things that ultimately kind of lead us down a slippery slope. Okay, prioritizing REM sleep for emotional regulation. So REM sleep itself, and that's on the next slide, is almost a little bit of an emotional reset. So kind of the importance of sleep and why I often talk about the phases of sleep is important, and matching your REM and your deep sleep is going to be super important from an emotional regulation standpoint. I put some supplements down there, obviously magnesium threonate, things like GABA, L-theanine, just for more so calm focus. And just reiterating kind of, you can't build mental toughness on a broken brain. Okay, look after your brain, and kind of your ability to navigate tough situations is going to improve. And then the resiliency side of it requires recovery. So sleep itself is going to be regenerative for the brain. Your deep sleep's looking more at central nervous system recovery, whereas your REM sleep is more emotional reset. I'm sure you guys already know this, but I just wanted to talk about kind of how I look at sleep. So obviously I use a Whoop, but kind of in regards to how much sleep we're looking for in the phases of sleep, I always say when you're looking at the four phases, so awake, light, deep, and REM, what I'm looking for is less than 10% of your total sleep awake, ideally 5%. Then we want 40 to 50% of your sleep light, and then 20 to 25% of deep and REM sleep. So if we can aim for those sort of figures from a recovery perspective, you'll be in a good position. I'm a big believer in quality over quantity as well. That's not to say I want you to sleep for 5 hours, but I find that a great sleep time for me is around about 6.5 to 7 is good for me. I get through all the phases and I feel refreshed. So I'm a big believer in working on sleep quality than quantity. You know, the coined phrase within the industry, get 8 hours. Sometimes it's not feasible. Sometimes it's not possible. We spoke about this with Marty and kind of, I think it was Josh as well. Sometimes it's not feasible to get 8 hours. So kind of, I think putting the premise on the quality over the quantity, but getting as close to the 8 hours as possible that fits into your regular life is super important as well. So just improve that sleep quality is going to have a massive upturn in regards to kind of improving that resiliency as well. I wanted to put a few things of which, again, you're all aware, things that don't lead into mental toughness. And when it comes to dopamine, kind of, sugar and alcohol obviously go without saying, emotional reactivity and just your ability to control your emotions, but most importantly, understand your emotions, remember, lack of purpose and vision, which we spoke about a little bit early on. Kind of, I do believe that kind of the drive and desire and kind of that mental toughness to do the hard stuff when you haven't got a higher purpose, I think it's a lot easier to give you an excuse or yourself a reason not to do it. So for me, kind of creating a purpose, creating a vision, I've said before, I'm not the greatest person in the world at projecting. So you might say, what's your 5-year goal, Dan? I won't be able to be very clear with it, but in regards to my daily, my weekly, my monthly, my yearly goals, they are crystal clear. So I think kind of having a purpose and having your values set in regards to all the different realms that we talk about. So for me, it's personal, physical, and professional. Having goals set that are closely linked to your values, essentially will allow you to break through those brick walls a lot easier. And then the last one that I wanted to put in there was victim identity. kind of there's a lot of this kind of victim mentality. I always say woe is me in the world. Like, again, I tend not to surround myself. You know, you guys know I'm a bit of a lonely guy in here. I've got my son and my dog. I don't see many people because I'm always in my house. But I tend to not surround myself with these type of people just for a lot of different reasons. But you guys all know those people that every time I speak, I call them energy vampires. They just kind of literally, you have one conversation, they drain you. Okay, whereas the reality is that it's just lack of perception. Kind of, and you have these conversations with people that kind of, it's woe is me, everything's the worst thing in the world, and just everything's moan, 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 moan. Whereas that's, for me, that's something that can be changed. And those of you guys that have spoke to me, even in the worst situations that you've ever been in, there's a positive to it. John D. Martini always said to me, when I did some work with him, that kind of with every negative charge is a positive, every positive charge it's a negative. So we have a duty to ourselves that when something really shit is happening, what's a positive in that situation? What is it teaching me? I think kind of it was Marty was speaking about a couple of weeks ago when Beckett was up early in the morning, was a couple of hours of sleep down. I think Beckett was getting up at like 4 a.m. And the first thing I said to Marty, I said, you get to do that. You're privileged. You get to spend an extra hour with your son in the morning. So it's reframing. Yes, I'm tired. Yes, I don't want to be up this early, which nobody does if they don't have to be. But if we flip it on its head and he gets to spend an extra hour with his son, kind of it just changes the psyche of it. It changes the psychology around things. And it's very easy to lean into the negative and this is shit and kind of this kind of woe is me mentality. But just for a month, just for a week, just flip it on its head, kind of try and flip the switch and see how different things act. I say as humans, like, yes, we are muscles, bones, etc., but we've got millions of cells in our body, right? And what is the powerhouse of every single one of those cells? It's ATP. Okay, it's mitochondria, it's energy. Okay, so essentially we are all just big bundles of millions of cell pockets of energy. And if you breathe the right energy into your brain, into kind of everything that you're doing, kind of you'll see a total uptake in how you perceive the world and things that were perceivably not so good previously, I guarantee you they will get a lot better. Okay. So the victim identity is something that I'm not a big fan on. And then just building resilience by controlling the four levers. So perception on stress perception or perception of stress. So the interpretation of it is going to determine the impact. Your response time. For me, I had a conversation with one of clients recently. We've been doing a lot of work in regards to his frustration. And I said, every time you get frustrated, pause for 5 seconds, do a couple of breaths, and then choose your response. Have a think about your response. Don't make it instinctive. Like, really think about your response and see how that affects kind of your perception of the situation. It makes a massive difference. So response time is important. So just take a breath, count to five, take a couple of deep breaths, actually think about what's triggered you, what's been said, and your response to it. Your recovery practices, which is going to be kind of sleep, breath, get out in nature, kind of hopefully some of you guys are getting sun. It's terrible weather over here, but get out early in the morning, get some sun on the skin, vitamin D, get some fresh air, get some grass beneath your feet. And then just that narrative control of kind of who you believe you are, and just change that perception and understand every single one of you guys on this call, kind of, I'm going to hazard a guess of 10 times the men that sometimes you believe you are. I know I've been there. I know I've kind of struggled with confidence and those sort of things, but we all have moments. We all have moments where kind of we're a little bit more harsh on ourselves than we need to be. And just that narrative control is important. It's easy to lead into negative kind of connotations of ourselves, but that's just a safety or protective mechanism. Get yourself out of there. So that narrative for me is important. So no weak stories, things like I'm not cut out for this, kind of it leads to neurological shutdown. It's been proven. So more reframe with this is who I am. This is how I act. This is what I do. So more affirmative action speak. I think kind of from a neurological standpoint, it resets kind of everything from a kind of amygdala and kind of prefrontal cortex standpoint. So that activation and kind of being very distinctive in exemplifying and talking positivity into your life whether it be through gratitude, whether it be through spoken word, will have a really positive impact on kind of mentally what's happening up from a neurobiology standpoint or from a neuroplasticity standpoint. And then I've left this last slide in just because it was in my last slide, identity versus kind of discipline. And I just think it's an important slide because I can talk on this slide just to finish off today. So understand your identity precedes your behavior. Okay. It's important that a lot of the time, and I've had this conversation, and those of you guys have received an onboarding email from me have said the same. I talk about leaning, men have to speak about feelings. It's in my initial onboarding email because men aren't comfortable talking about feelings. So I'm a big believer in leaning into emotions, and men stop trying to act tough, be tough, be the man that does the hard things, kind of, because for me, behavior always follows belief. So kind of understanding emotions doesn't make you a weak man. Actually being able to manage and control emotions makes you a superhuman, in my opinion. So be the man that does the hard things. Okay, so a little task for you guys to do. Again, what I want you to do is when kind of take a few breaths through your nose, and don't do this now, I'll just write this down. Take a few breaths through your nose when something bad happens. So if something kind of triggers you and you feel pissed off or you feel frustrated, just take a couple of deep breaths through your nose and name the emotion that you're feeling. And then basically ask yourself a question. What's the next right action? And then take that action. So putting yourself into situations, as I said, not shirking from situations is important, because remember, when it comes to neuroplasticity, we have to expose ourselves to something to change something, right? So next time you're feeling a little bit pissed, annoyed, whether it be with a colleague, with your coach, you can all be pissed off at me if you want, kind of anybody, you know, just kind of take a couple of deep breaths through your nose, a bit of nasal breathing. Try to name the emotion that you're feeling, not frustration, not anger. What is it that you're actually feeling? What have you heard? Have you felt offended? Do you feel abandoned? Like, what is that actual emotion that you're feeling? Name it. What's the next right action in that situation? So let's use an example. If I'm with a spouse and kind of something's happened and I'm getting frustrated, but what I'm feeling is abandoned, my next step would be to verbalize, this is how what you've just done or what's happened has made me feel, for instance. So kind of what's the next right action and take that. So I'd implore you guys to try that. Take a breath, name the action, and kind of what's the next right action, and then execute it. Kind of, and over time, just build reps in it. You're all going to have situations that frustrate you. There's not one man on here that can tell me that, oh, I'm free and easy. Nothing frustrates me. So your goal of today's kind of talk is to identify it and kind of, again, going back to what Ben said in regard to controlling your arousal state, get better at kind of deciding the outcome of that. Okay. And just your call to action today is kind of just find out where you're avoiding discomfort. Where are you letting your emotions lead? What would be the toughest, most grounded version of yourself today? Then do that. So for me, kind of leaning into the hard stuff, and a great goal from this talk in regards to building emotional resilience and mental toughness is leaning into the shit that you're not so good at. So for me, I don't care what you're good at. Like, if you're good at something, keep doing it. Well done. Okay, but today is more about kind of leaning into the stuff emotionally and mentally that are potentially hindering your progress. And this is me speculating, it's not kind of fact, that may be hindering your progress, that may be holding you back. And you'll find that if you're able to identify it, let's start to make those weaknesses or the things that you're not so good at strength. We was all able to typify a win at the start. If I asked you guys what you're not doing very well, I'd imagine you could name two or three things very quickly off the bat, because we are negatively led, right? We are negatively biased as human beings. So identify those things and then just kind of create an action plan around those as well. So for me, it's just making sure kind of you lead into kind of the person you're meant to be, but understanding what a massive kind of impact kind of building that emotional resiliency, building mental toughness can have in your future as men, whether it be related to your training, your body composition, your longevity, your roles within your households, being the patriarchs of your family, being a boss, being an employee, employer. The brain is a strong tool with all of those. So just identifying those areas and making them strengths, I think, was the biggest thing that I wanted to get across. I was going to say tonight, but it's afternoon for you guys. Get across today and just kind of lean into the areas where you're not as strong and you're not as weak, because it's, again, you're only as strong as your weakest link. And if we can identify those and respond differently, I think you guys are all cooking on gas anyway, but it's just going to over amplify everything that you're doing. So that's the slides. So I'm going to open up the floor. Is first and foremost, how was that? And secondly, kind of, I'm going to open the floor to questions. So feel free to kind of just unmute yourself if you've got any questions, and kind of let's go through them. If you've managed to identify any areas, or if there's anything across the slides that you want me to elaborate on. Cheers, Jeff. Thank you, buddy. Great to see you, mate. Thanks for turning up.
I got one for you, Dan. So I love that quote, your identity drives your outcome. You know, I'm in a transition period of my life and kind of my identity is changing. Mm-hmm. Maybe like a good journal prompt or some kind of way of like kind of unearthing more of like what you want your identity to be. If you really have, you know, the opportunity to change, like what is a way to kind of get to more of the core of what is that true identity that's not really tied to maybe the life that you've had or a life that you're no longer interested in leading.
I think going back to what we said about values. So we have spoke about John D. Martini, but I think for you, yeah, kind of reading the values factor by John D. Martini.
Great book. Great,
yeah,
book.
Yeah. So you've read the book. So I think kind of just leaning into your values a little bit more, because again, it's quite often your identity is wrapped up in kind of, we've spoke to you about before when you did the triathlons, you identified as a triathlete. That was kind of your whole being was kind of all wrapped up in that. But knowing you now and getting to know you, that's not who you truly are. You're a family man. You're a father first. You're a very proud husband. And your family mean more to you than anybody, essentially. And everything you do in regards to the move and everything that's happening at the moment, that's all based around your family. So for me, kind of, not being tied into kind of being a family man, and you're not to Jacqueline and Beckett, that's not your identity. You have to have a separate identity to being that. And you start to unearth that and kind of understand what that is in regards to what are your goals, kind of what do you want to achieve within the remit of your life, I think would be a great start. And we spoke about kind of what you want to create in Portugal and kind of where you see that going in regards to the retreat and those sort of things. And I think for you personally, knowing you, kind of going down that route of, as I've said, being able to specify exactly what that looks like, what's involved, I think, and then creating almost a USP off the back of that, that wouldn't be a bad start at all.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. Any other questions, boys? No? All good, then. All good. Well, I won't keep you guys any longer. As always, thank you for kind of attending today. I hope it makes sense. Obviously, if there's ever any questions off the back of this, or you struggle with any of this, or you want me to reiterate kind of anything, then please feel free to drop me a message. I'm always available. Or if you want me to go a little bit further, kind of into certain things, then just let me know. But those of you guys that are going to be listening to this on replay, I hope you've enjoyed any questions. But for those of you guys that were here tonight, I appreciate you giving me an hour of your time. I hope you enjoyed, and I look forward to speaking to you all later on. Take care, guys.
Hey, thanks so much. Thanks, Dan. Great talk.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Dan.
Take care.